If you like stuff, then check out the Am I Stuff podcast with Mr. Kelsey Hudgens. He's a fella.
Live from the Scuba Rescue Studios.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen, live from the Screwball Whiskey Studios indeed. Hey guys, how you living? You doing well? Good, glad to hear that. So in this episode, my very good friend Doc Simon stopped by to talk about the 2019 seventh annual tribute to the band that will be held at the Polly's Island Tavern on October 20th from 7 to 10 p.m. I suggest if you are anywhere near the Polly's Island area on that date, and even if you're not, you should do everything that you can to remedy that. See, remedy, I got that.
Sounds, yeah.
You should remedy that and make it to that gig because it's going to be very good. Whether or not you're into the band, you will enjoy this gig, and it's basically all of the musicians in this area who are worth half a damn get together and do this sort of tribute every year, and it's really fun. So you should definitely check it out. It's a reunion. It's a family reunion for all the musicians.
It is, by now especially. It's the same
right
year, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is going to be that's basically what we talk about in this one. So yeah, definitely don't want to give you any more spoilers. We also do go a little bit behind the scenes of music, and we talk about gigs and stuff like that. And you get to hear thoughts that are different than mine, which you guys are used to hearing all the time. So you get to hear a different voice saying some things that you wouldn't normally hear because they're coming from a musician. So, yeah. That's the content warning there for you. Please go to the MIStuffPodcast.com, and all of the updated videos will be there, blog entries that I've written over the last couple of months that I haven't done, honestly, are there as well, and links to the singles that I've recorded, if you want to check those out, are there, and also links to all the social media, Kelsey Hudgens, at Yonder Wizard, at MI Stuff Podcast, on all social media fronts, and there will also be links in the description of this video for Doc's bands that he graciously fronts with all of the fantastic guys from, say, Paperwork, which you guys have heard on the podcast before, and a lot of other guys. So I'm going to have links to the bands that he is in, plus the tribute page in the description of this video. I'm trying to make sure I get all this stuff right. And what else do we got? Oh, yes, please, if you're listening to this on audio, I invite you to go check out the YouTube channel and subscribe, Kelsey Hudgens on YouTube, and trying to get the subscription numbers up to 420, just because that's the next cool number that I can meet the threshold.
That's a pretty cool number.
That's the next cool number that I have. We're at about 350 right now, so we're scooting right on up there to it. So help me get there. Share this page, subscribe, click subscribe, create another account, and subscribe with that one if you've already subscribed. Actually, don't do that. I don't want you to cheat. But yeah. So
part of you does.
Yeah. Well, part of me does.
Know, we
but
all
I'm
have
trying
that
to
little,
snuff
little,
that part out.
You know, what is it? Streak of larceny.
Oh yeah, for sure.
We all do.
Trying to snuff that little part out there.
That's what we have to do. Yeah. It's, you know,
those are the
society. But
those are the goals. But anyway, you're going to enjoy this episode, and I'm going to go ahead and let you get to it. So please, without further ado, episode number 175 of My Stuff Podcast. Enjoy, motherfuckers. I really look forward every year to the band tribute at the pit. And for those audio folks who did not get to hear the first couple of minutes of content there, I urge you to go to the YouTube page and subscribe. Kelsey Hudgens on YouTube. But we are here with Brother Doc Simon. Simons. I always want to say Simon.
It's Does better everybody than do that? Simmons. No. The Simmons I hate.
Yeah.
Because it's like, no, two
There's
M's
no
is
two M's.
Short. Thank you.
Yeah.
Simon, I don't mind so much, especially, you know, Paul Simon's like...
Yeah, right.
No, it's funny. The Simmons drives me crazy.
I guarantee it, man, because mine is like...
But you can't keep correct, you know, like you're at the doctor's.
Oh,
Mr.
yeah.
Simmons. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I get Casey I get Casey and Kelly a lot because apparently Kelly. Those seem like more acceptable names for guys than Kelsey. Which
Kelly?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think so.
I get Kelly and Casey a lot.
I can see the Casey.
Yeah, a lot. I get those. Or Hudgens. People say Hudgens instead of Hudgens. My last name is spelled differently.
I can see that. I think some people might just forget about the H for some reason.
Yeah.
Like some names.
But, yeah, what can you do? But, anywho, so I don't want to lose the...
Oh, the poster.
We are doing... I want to get a good shot of it before I bring it back down here so that you can't see the bottom of it. We're gonna be doing this really awesome thing that you have organized every year, and I realize now how hard you work to organize it. After I myself thought, you know what, we could do one of these things for the Grateful Dead, and was like, shit, there is a lot of organization that goes into this.
I remember that sort of aborted.
I quit drinking like a week after I had that idea. So,
but you know, it's like, I think that's a great idea. I think it's a fabulous idea, but it takes a long time. I think the first one I started thinking about in May. I think I put it out there. Does anybody into the band like I am?
Yeah.
And people just came out of the woodwork. So it was like, oh, I could do this. But I had a model, Patterson's model. He does a Graham Parsons.
Yeah.
He calls it the birthday hoot. It's always on the Sunday closest to Graham Parsons' birthday. So, I mean, and Daniel and I had been going down there for like seven, 8 years. And so... I said, shit, let's do one here. But, like, with a Dead tribute, see, if it was me, like, two drummers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, you really do it, you know.
You and that's do it, what do it like they would do it.
We always have two keyboard players, because the right, you do it. And, you know.
That's good, though, man. I really enjoy the fact that it's like a family reunion for those of us who never get to see each other.
That's a big part of it. That's a big part of it for me, for everybody, I think, in the music who plays.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we don't get to see each other.
And it's nice, too, to see that everybody around here has, like, this in common. Like, and you would think out of the bands that you would, like, if you were to poll 100 people of the bands that they would have a tribute show on, I doubt many of those people would say the band, but those who get it, get it.
Well, and even if you ask the public, okay, you get your musicians together.
Yeah,
forget about the public, just a group of musicians. What would they say their favorite tribute would be? I think the public, they don't know anything about the band.
Yeah.
Or very little. They know three songs. They know Ophelia and The Weight, which if you say The Weight, they don't even know. If you say, you have to say, Take a Load Off, Fanny.
Yeah.
You know, and Cripple Creek. And so when you say that, they go, oh, yeah, but they don't realize musicians, like, are totally into the catalog.
A
lot of them, not all of them, but that's what happened. I realized that everybody's like me.
Like, oh, yeah.
Like, these were big influences.
I feel the same way, man. Ever since, like most people, my introduction to the band outside of, you know, the big three was The Last Waltz, of course. And, man, just seeing how many names that I recognized that were willing to just come and do a show with this band that I was at that moment, you know, not privy to. And I was like, okay, this has to be, all of these people can't be wrong. So, yeah, and then here we are 7 years later. Am I reading that right? Seven years later, and man.
Yeah, and it's just always a really good show, I think. If I say so myself. Well, actually, Patterson is the band leader.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of like the host, the organizer.
Yeah, Patterson yelled at me on the mic last time. He was like, hey, buddy, you know there's another verse. And I was like, man, I was waiting for my little, sorry.
Well, you know.
Yeah, oh, well, what can you do?
Which, by the way, if anybody's out there who is a performer, come to rehearsal. It really helps.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not required.
That's my fault.
I know some people are out of town. Oh, yeah. I remember you didn't make it to rehearsal.
Yeah.
Oh.
I didn't.
But do you remember the first time you did Tennessee Jed?
Yes.
It was, I'll never forget this. Tennessee Jed has a horn section.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a horn section again this year. Connor Mills is the section leader. I remember you know, I'm kind of behind you a little bit.
Yeah.
Because the guest star is just a little in front. And so, you know, we start out and it's just great.
Yeah.
And I think it surprised you. My guess is you've never played that song with a horn section.
No.
So it was just so funny. You sang the first verse and you turned around in a space and went, you know, and then turned around and kept singing. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah. I know that I don't get nervous anymore for any gig except for that one. Only because there's so many moving parts, and I know that at that point I am the weakest link on stage.
Well, everybody is, because we've been doing this for 7 years.
Yeah.
We all knew this stuff before we started, you know, the house band.
Right.
I mean, everybody does great. It's like a song you sing once a year.
Yeah.
So,
I know I tried to do Life as a Carnival that 1 year, and I just blew that one.
Well, we didn't have horns either, and to me, without the, you know, I like that record. I guess that's what.
Yeah.
I'm not going to remember. It's really a horn-based song.
Yeah.
Cahoots. It was on Cahoots.
Right, right. I don't know. That song, and after that, I turned around and was like, I'm sorry.
I thought you turned around and said, wow.
Yeah.
That was the thing. Oh, no, let's not even talk about life.
Tennessee Jed.
Yeah.
Tennessee Jed.
I turned around
and was like.
And then, yeah.
Yeah, that one was fun. Like,
yeah,
I don't
that's
think,
what I was talking about.
I've been
about.
Chasing that dragon ever since that night, man, just because I was
well,
like.
Well, you get it again. We have the, I'm calling them the tribute horns.
Yeah, man. And, dude, I have, yeah, that song. I'm actually glad that you allowed me to do that one, because I was looking through. And I was looking through the catalog.
It's not a band song, right?
It's not a band song. But
Levon sang it.
Right. Levon did
it.
And his version is great. His version is great. And I don't know who's trying to call me right now, but
you're going to be
busy, buddy. But, yeah, so just, what? Oh, it's ringing through my. It's ringing through the speaker that it's connected to over there. I was like, you turned that off. But anyway, yeah, man, that his version of that Tennessee Jed is just really nice. Once I saw that he
so
did
funky,
that,
yeah,
and you could hear that he was like aging, but very powerful vocally, and just in the band that was behind him, and that one was just that little. God, it's so good.
And then I just love this kind of a little Dixieland segment.
Yep.
And the band just kind of the horn section just kind of falls in.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's fun, man. But I was in the last time when I didn't get my cue come back around, I was just waiting for that. And then there's like a.
Right, in the middle.
It almost stops. The song almost ends right there.
I know. And that's the kind of things that's great about the tribute. Everybody looks around and goes, okay, yeah, we keep going this time.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when the last time.
Yeah.
Everybody kind of remembers. Well, it's one song. You play this song once a year.
Yeah, man. But I
have to learn, you know, like 30 songs that I play once a year.
Yeah, right, right. So, I mean, you guys, the set list hasn't changed a whole lot, that's nice for musicians.
But see, by the seventh year, everybody's got it
right.
A little more down. Yeah, that's pretty much Patterson's thing in Austin. They switch around a lot more. I think everybody knows all the Graham Parsons tunes and the Burrito Brothers tunes. We have some new people coming. We have some Charleston people coming.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, what's up, Preston? I see you there.
Oh, Preston. Hi. I don't know if you know about the song we wrote on Facebook this morning.
No, you and Preston wrote a song?
No, me and Preston and Dan Burgess and Joe Ford. And it was, Dan Burgess said, you know, just Home Depot, man. Some, you know, I hate being here, right? He said, you should write the Home Depot blues. You know, sort of a manic moment. And I said, let's everybody, because it's just, you know, two lines, because one repeats.
Yeah.
So all you have to do is really two lines, and everybody sort of, all this stuff, Porter Joe sent a bridge. He said, here's the bridge. It was, you know, it was really cool. So I, like, then spent the rest of the day changing it all around. But, you know, Preston sent this really great one about, I hope we can say it. It's out there, right? Anyway, right?
Oh, yeah.
So he's talking about going to the Home Depot for some pipe dope. But, you know, that's stuff you fix your sink with. There's really such thing in plumbing, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's fun, man. I have a hard time co-writing. I don't know why, but I just have a hard time doing it. Because I feel like I want anything that somebody else says, I feel like I'm just putting my stamp on everything, and I don't think that's healthy in a co-writing situation.
You know,
is it not?
It's the only thing I can do, because I hate my lyrics.
Really?
I always think my lyrics are trite. So, and I don't write that much, but actually I've written some more, but not all of it was co-written, but I agonize. You know, I had this friend in high school who's a playwright, Bill Mesnick, out in L.A., and he's, you know, wonderful writer.
Yeah.
And it just occurred to me a couple years ago, because we've kept up, I said, do you want to try to co-write something? Because I suck at lyrics. You know, I just can't do it. And he said, well, I had this song laying around that I never did music. But I haven't sat there. You know, that's the thing now. Like, in Nashville, like, let's write that.
Yeah.
And then they sit down and they book writing sessions. Like, you know.
I think it's hard to write like that, like when you're planning to write.
That's the way they're doing it.
To me, I have to.
Music City.
I have to get that idea and be like, oh, wow, that's too good to let that slip away.
Yeah.
And then I'll write that line down, and usually it comes accompanied with like three or four more. And then by the time I look down at my phone again, it's like, okay, so this is a song now.
But, I mean, have you ever like sat down with somebody and let's try to write something?
I have.
I never have.
I have. It just doesn't. That doesn't translate well for me.
Yeah. Well, Patterson. Yes, Patterson. If he ever co-wrote anything, because he's telling me all about this. How, you know, so and so books a co-writing session with like Sam Bush or whatever. So I said, well, do you ever co-write anything? He said, I just can't. He said, people send me stuff that I know are lyricists or whatever.
Yeah.
And he said, I get them, and I just go, I can't write this. Like, he's just, it doesn't.
You don't feel it.
He doesn't feel it.
Yeah.
He doesn't feel it.
You have to feel it. That's the. I've got this thing to where I feel like the songs write themselves. I just so happen to be holding the pen at that time, or my phone. You know, I've
never had that feeling. It's agonizing to me. Now, not the music. I mean, I'm, you know, you hang out and you jam, and
yeah.
You know, musical ideas are sort of never a chore.
Yeah, no, that's. I think that's where I suffer a bit. Is in the because I'm a chords guy. Yeah. I'm a chords and strums.
Yeah.
Like, or a finger pick kind of. I'm not much of a.
You're a rhythm guitar player.
Yeah, I think so. And I feel that. Like, I mean, and then I'm fair. I'm fair enough on leads, and playing outside of the rhythm. But
I just, the way that I write is I feel very John Moreland, Jason Isbell, very, you know, just use the 1-4-5-6 minor.
And keep it simple.
Yeah, right.
And the beauty is
don't get in the way of the story.
Simple, right.
Yeah, that's what I like to do is to not get in the way of the story.
Well, that makes sense. See, my trouble is I don't know how to tell a story. I mean, I'm just a terrible lyricist, you know. So
I don't know that that's the case.
Well, I struggle with it. I mean, I agonize and finally get it out. And so I think what I've ever put out there is okay.
Right.
You know. But actually, I'm really proud. I wrote or co-wrote. See, Patterson co-wrote with me on this EP that hopefully I'll finish by the end of the year. But he's what he calls a fixer. In other words, he fixes things. He says, how about this word here? That, and he says, why don't we have a bridge? Why don't we turn this verse into a bridge?
Yeah.
And like, so, like, of course he's co-writing, but he says that's the way he'll co-write. But anyway, four of the five songs I either wrote or co-wrote, so...
That's good, though. I mean, as long as you could feel like maybe you accomplished what you set out to accomplish.
Well, I sort of did. I said, you know, Patterson once said this, because I've always, very few, you know, except like Spicy Hot stuff, have I, you know, not just covers.
Yeah.
In terms of the stuff I've recorded. So he said, you know, you go through all this. You know, you book the studio, a lot of times you're spending some money. You know, if you have a band, you want to make, you know, you want to do a record. He says, why don't you do your own stuff? You know, you're doing all this time, just write some stuff because, you know, so, I mean, I always heard that. I mean, I don't record a lot. I don't have a lot of stuff out. But this, you know, this last time when we decided to do this, these five songs, I thought, well, and Patterson's going to put all his time in, you know. So,
oh, yeah.
Because he's a mensch. He's doing this for, you know. So anyway, sorry, I digressed.
No, nonsense. I love that. That's what this thing's for, is digressions. That's all my podcast is just about an hour and a half of I digress. And
I like digressions.
Yeah. The digressions. Sounds like a modern doo-wop band, the digressions. But no, I like to do certain things like sometimes I will record when I first started playing with American Sound, which is my electric setup, I was not as comfortable on electric as I am on acoustic, so I would just get like a GarageBand drum beat and play some keys, something on keys or some bass line or something, and just jam
something
to
practice
that.
With,
yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, I ended up recording a couple of songs where I was just jamming with electric, and then I would just be jamming, and then I would just hear lyrics. I would just hear something and be like, okay, so maybe I've laid down this nice little riff. Maybe I'll just sing something on top of it. And then I ended up with the song that I now use for my podcast. Well, the outro now, but it was my original podcast intro, the little Where's My Monster thing. And just, the songs turn out completely different when the music comes first.
You know, I think...
For me.
I think being on electric guitar... The few things I've written... especially this year because of my hand, but... I just find the musical ideas, I can express them, you know. Now, I think a lot of lyricists... I mean, it's just, you know, it's fine to just be chordal, you know, but there's some stuff that you just automatically do when you're playing an electric guitar as you're trying to come up with these music, where, you know, a two-note thing can be nice and it's there, whereas, you know, on an acoustic, it's like, no, I've got to play these full chords for it to sound good. Well, that's cool. I didn't know you were playing. I thought you were just playing rhythm guitar and you had an electric guitar.
Mm-mm. No.
What is it?
It's a trio.
All right.
It's a little blues power trio. Not necessarily blues. It's we do a lot of, I don't know, we do some My Morning Jacket. We do some, I mean, a pretty good bit of Hendrix and Beatles and Floyd. Really? It's called the American Sound, right. But we do a lot of British music. And I think I thought of that, you know, because like we do a lot of Pink Floyd. We do a lot of Bowie. Well, I mean, a lot of Beatles. We do like Red House or Starter Won't Start. Some stuff like that.
I know Starter Won't Start.
The little Lightning Hopkins. Towns Van Zandt covered it.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, we do a little blues, but that's sort of my style of playing is like I'm naturally a blues lead player. I feel like,
oh yeah, the old pentatonic, right?
Right. Yeah.
Right. Well, that's
which you see, I don't even know pentatonic.
I don't know that shit either. But
I don't know any of what
I don't know any.
But just
I know a little bit just because after
sure
50 years you pick it up.
Yeah, sure. But I feel like just sitting in front of because Hendrix was a blues player and
and a soul player.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
on those big
right
and Little Richard bands. Yeah.
I most of those guitar players that I listened to growing up were just very inspired by blues player. And I mean, even David Gilmour, like most of the stuff that he does is very blues driven, and he does a lot of extra bends and breaks, but I don't know. I would consider that. I would consider myself a blues player if I had to, but then again, am I?
Well, you must be if you're playing like, you know, Cream and Hendrix or, you know, you must be playing some because just like you said, that's all a blues. I mean, you could call a pentatonic, I suppose, a blues scale.
A lot
of people would just call that a blues scale. But yeah, you're playing all that rock stuff. Yeah.
I mean,
Like blues. I mean, right. Pink Floyd doesn't sound like blues.
Right.
It's not. But that's the roots of lead guitar.
Exactly, and that was the original breaking the rules and making right. it sound okay. Like you're stepping outside of what is normally allowed, you know.
Well, you know who first choked or bent a note, you know, pulled up, and the old blues guys would take the G string. They all had just acoustic guitars,
yeah,
but they'd find the once they could afford it, the fattest plain G. And put that on there so they could bend stuff. And that's how bends started to come in.
So you mean an unwound?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, which sounds terrible.
Yeah. I mean,
it really does. But, see, the jazz guys didn't bend anything. If you think about it, they do this little weird bend that isn't even a half step, you know.
Those gypsy players, man.
I think he might have had a... No, I don't think he had a plane. He's just so amazing. He could do good bends, but Django, but...
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, yeah, the blues, like, really led to more lead guitar.
For sure.
Yeah. As we know, rock lead guitar.
Right, right. And that's... I don't know. I like that stuff, man. I will never...
I didn't know you were doing that. That's cool.
Yeah, man.
I'll have to see you.
I do that once a month, because... Which Adam and Smitty have in normal jobs, and
do they?
Yeah. Both of them have day jobs. So, and I do not. But it gets to the point to where, and you know, if you've been in bands, anytime you play with the same group of people for a really long time, it starts to become toxic in some places, to say the least.
Or you know, you just. It can be, right? Or, you know, it's just you get a little bored, you want another project.
Right, right. This is my other band.
I'm in that place.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It happens, man.
I've been doing the same thing for like 20 years here.
You know, it happens, dude. You have to do something to not get boredom. My entire life is me seeking a cure for my boredom.
I can relate.
My entire life is seeking cure for
some kind of reasonably healthy.
Right, right. Unfortunately, most of the things that I've found along the way until recently have been not so good for me.
But I mean, that's creative people, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And just that's my whole thing is I just don't want to get bored. And
once I start to get bored, I'm like, guys, we're going to have to do something different. We're going to have to I'll bring in some new stuff or some old stuff that we've not done yet.
Yeah. But they're busy also in their
jobs. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, they're busy in their jobs. And I get to do this, the electric thing once, one weekend out of the month. I call it my National Guard.
Do you have, like, a residency somewhere? Are you doing it?
It seems like we got a residency at the Garden City Pier because we've played.
I'm sorry.
We've just played there so much over the last few weeks, I know a lot of folks don't like the load in, but I'm not crazy about it. But we're at the front of the pier, not the end, so. There's that, and plus, folks have started to notice.
The worst. It's a pier, and so it's 100 feet, and it's like 10 stories or something.
Yeah.
Above the beach, and you have to get all your equipment up there with this huge long ramp.
Yeah, the longest ramp ever. And if you're carting up, like sometimes they'll open the gate for you so you can cart halfway up and then go up the stairs.
They'll open the gate if they feel like it.
Yeah, right. But we'll do the trip all the way around, and then I'll cart all the way around and through the arcade. Excuse me, guys. I'm like, and here's the thing: if you see somebody, let's level here for a second. If you see somebody walking with a cart full of equipment and a guitar and all sorts of other things, fucking move. I'm sorry, but just come on.
Or at
man.
Least. I say, watch your back.
Right, yeah.
Behind you. And they still don't move. Well, a lot of them are,
I'll
inebriated.
Be, yeah, right. And I'll be nice about it sometimes. Excuse me, guys, can I sneak by you here real quick? And then they'll turn around and they'll see. I've had people that'll turn around and look down. Look.
Yeah.
And see and then just look at me like.
Yeah, you ask me to stink eye, right?
Bro, I'm working here, man. Like, I know you don't see this, and it's impossible for you to feel
those are people like think job, waiters, waitstaff are peons, and musicians are peons, and
like, dude, we're not that. Like, we're actual people. I think
we're special.
Yeah, we are.
No, I mean nobody's special, but
we're all special.
But there are a lot of places who like they treat the band like. Oh man, so glad you're here.
Yeah.
And they want to feed you and give you drinks and but the band is like, oh cool, the band is here. And they take care of you, and sometimes in some places,
Once you've been doing this thing for as long as for sure as long as you have I'm coming up on my 10th year with Cornbread now. So I think once you've done something for 10 years-ish, you can you have your rooms by that time. You've got the places that you do well, and they know you do well, and you have a good relationship built. And plus, in an area like this where there's a lot of restaurants that don't go out of business.
Yeah, I think people, for the most part, treat their bands pretty well around here. Most places, at least the employee food discount, just really nice and
just having just stage setups or a parking spot for you.
Would be real nice is like, well, there's a few places, but the PA. I won't mention names of clubs, but you know who you are when you have a PA for the house. It's not done here that much, as it is in a lot of other towns.
And I've noticed that sometimes even when there is a PA, just because I'm so used to bringing the system, mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll do that anyway. But
not if there's a sound guy in a system.
Not if there's a sound guy in a system.
This is what I'm talking about,
Yeah. If there's a sound guy in a system, there's a gig that I played that I don't do anymore that's up in Myrtle proper that had a sound guy and a sound system. But the sound guy would set the sound and then go home for like an hour and a half.
Oh, he was really set it and forget it. This guys who were always doing this, set it and forget it, because they're getting feedback. But he was like the other extreme. That's not good. That's not having a sound guy.
Yeah.
It's worse because at least when you're trying to run it on stage, which they just hate doing.
Yeah.
If at least you're there, you can change it.
If you, yeah, right. If you know something's wrong, you can change it. But
oh yeah, that no, I wouldn't like that. I'd probably do it anyway because it's just so nice not to schlep everything in.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, and some places have like no sound guy and ridiculously old or messed up sounds, and I would bring my own in for sure.
I think places are starting to notice around here because there's a few places that now have PA that didn't when we first started. They didn't, and now they're actually starting to make stage improvements and stuff. I don't mind saying Captain Archie's up in North Myrtle Beach. It used to be Captain Pooh's.
Right.
They have a PA system now, and they've built up a nice little stage, and they've got like...
Is that the place that's like mostly outside, or am I...
Kind of, yeah. It's a little like a tiki, everything's open.
Right next to like a...
The waterway.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, I played that up. Had a disaster of a gig once. But that, yeah, they have their own, and they have their own guy, right?
Well, they don't have a guy, but the board is on stage. So at least that is...
I hope they do okay. The trouble with that is, you know, you get different hands. Every band is dealing with it, and somebody's going to mess it up eventually.
I think the better bands have a guy that they appoint. You know, you're in charge of this now.
It's just some guys don't care enough about the equipment. Eventually, right. It'll get messed. It's hard for the house. You know.
Oh yeah.
Well,
yeah,
Island Bar Surfside probably still has a very nice setup, and Seth went in there and tried to get it all right.
Yeah.
And people messed it up. And I went in there and tried to get it all right a long time ago. And evidently, and so nobody uses it. It's useless.
Do they mess with the EQ, the rainbow?
Is that
the
thing they do? Yeah, well, I guess I wouldn't even care. Yeah, all right, do that. Do a smiley face. Yeah. You know, but no, I'm talking about like plugging stuff in and unplugging stuff in and just basically...
Messing with that.
Well, you know, changing. I mean, it's comp. Their system was like a really good system. Like it had separate like crossovers and
because
their subs were passive and
yeah.
So it did take some sort of work to get it all working. But at that point, leave it alone. You know, you can turn the knobs. That's okay.
Yeah, right.
But sooner or later, somebody started messing with it.
Oh man,
so.
And then you one channel down, then you're two channel down.
Right. And you just, I mean, it's not worth it. It takes too long to figure out what's happening with the system. You might as well bring your own system in. So
yeah.
I think everybody's had to.
I'm fine with that. I'm fine with bringing it. Because, dude, I've been doing this shit for so long, dude. I'll set this thing up in 5 minutes. I will be making noise. I can pull into a parking lot and 10 minutes later... Sound checking.
If you're solo too. I mean, you know, I haven't played solo in years. It's always a 4-piece band, and I'm really, you know, I can do it, but I'm old. And I'm tired. Boy, I'd love to. If you're out there and you're a young guy, and you know, for like $100 a night, you're willing to bring a sound system and run sound and stay till 2 a.m. I'm interested. Talk to me.
We've actually talked about that in Cornbread recently as to whether or not it'll be worth it to bring somebody in to run sound for us and try to push for the extra, you know, extra $100 from a venue to provide our, like if we provide.
Well, then it's like, okay, if you give me the 100, if you're willing to pay us that much, then we still won't have the sound guy. Yeah. Well,
but it's just to switch from, because then it will be a 4-piece instead of a 3-piece.
Well, that's, you know, and I think that's good. I think that's what ends up, you know, in a good situation with, you know, a production.
Yeah.
Where, you know, I mean, I play with guys that don't care if they make 100, which is not good. In some sense, because it keeps the market a little low.
Yeah.
But also, I have bigger bands, so you know, it's just they have a budget. I understand. It's you know, I understand.
Oh, sure.
I understand the business. It's just you know, the bands I play with are lucky enough. Well, they having day jobs and stuff. So
Oh yeah, and that's really good too for us, is that, you know, Adam and Smitty have that, and plus with the solos and the other side gigs that I do.
Well, the solos is those, if you want to make a living at music, yeah, you have to.
That's what I've noticed.
And you can do a double. I mean, it's hard, I'm sure, but yeah, you go set up your solo, and it's not that awful.
Not at all. And that's I think, is the best way, is if you can offer the solo, the duo, and the full band. If you can offer all three of those things, you can work just about every night of the week. That was Richie calling me a while ago. I'll guarantee that somebody's canceled somewhere tonight, and they probably need a cover for a solo room. And that happens a lot. And it gets to the point where this time of year, where I'm like, you know, coming up on the winter, I'll be like, sure, I'll take whatever you got. Sure.
Yeah.
But, man, I made the mistake a couple of years ago of saying yes to everything and then just having to cancel three in a row because I don't have a voice.
Yeah. You know? Singing everything.
So. Because in the solos, you don't have much to hide behind. And I don't use the loop station or anything anymore.
Yeah, I don't.
So
I'm not into them. I don't really know how to use them. But, you know.
I used to use that thing every gig. Like, yeah. But then it got to the point where I was, like, defining myself by it. And I said, I can't do that. So.
Well, that's part of why I really can't or don't do solo gigs. Because I can't play any lead.
Yeah.
You know, if there's a bass player there, I can play some lead and stuff. But yeah, I mean, solos seem hard in that way, that, like, it's all on you.
I love
all
that.
On us. Yeah, do
I
you?
Love that.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, gives me.
See,
gives
that's
me,
part of, like, what I'm getting tired of.
The fact that, like, it all being on you to organize and to.
Well, some of that for sure, but. Singing, it's not my strong suit, and yet, you know, a couple of in the bands I've had in the last few years, you know, a couple of guys would sing a couple of things, but it's not my strong suit, so, you know, singing everything was, I'd rather not. But well, I was forced to, and then, yeah, sort of organizing everything, and it's my PA, and, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and, well, in 20 years of the same material, more or less.
Oh yeah, that I understand. I retire a lot of songs. And
see, that's another thing about solo. You can. You can learn a new song every week. Oh, that's a cool song, let me learn it. And it's in the act.
Right.
You know, and it's like we all got lazy. Everybody got like you know, we don't call rehearsals for anything. You know, to learn a couple of new songs. No, we never did that, really. Not much. Every once in a while.
I've never been much of a practice or a rehearsals guy. We even with Cornbread, for as long as we've been doing this, we may have practiced three times in the history of the band. We just we
three. Yeah. I think I've even done better than that.
Yeah, we don't practice.
So I have to. Excuse me.
Yeah, you're
fill my water. So
by all means,
I need to do this. Right?
By all means.
Yeah.
Yeah. We do. We'll feel like if we get to a song that I'm like, okay, you guys have you guys heard this song? Mm-hmm. And sometimes they have, and even if they haven't,
Even if they haven't,
I'm like, do you guys?
Okay, it's a G.
Yeah, you want to give this thing a shot?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, or all right, just follow me on this. And that's right. One cool thing is just the fact that we've all played together for so long.
Well, and yeah, and you know, you got Adam, he's the lead player, so he, you know, he has the luxury of what I call when in doubt, lay out.
Yes, the only
and
problem.
And you don't have a bass player.
We don't.
That would drive a bass player crazy.
Yes.
You wouldn't be able to keep a bass player. Because
no,
they have
couldn't.
To know the change.
Yeah, that's the one thing. That's the biggest problem is with playing bass. And I like to play bass. I actually play bass here a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you hate singing and playing bass?
It's hard.
I know it's hard.
It's hard
some
because
guys
it's
just
different.
Hate it like they won't do it.
is so much different than, like, because in rhythm, you got this one motion that you because this hand, you don't even think about this one anymore, really. I don't know if you're
and you don't think about this one anymore.
You don't think about that. Your arms and fingers are on autopilot at that point. They know what to do. Just get out of their way. And that's with bass. You're everything happens on an off beat. You're
you just have to, you know, stay on the beat, you know.
Yes.
And change. Keep the changes to me. I mean, if you played the root, you know, that's like if it's in G, you're just playing a G note.
Yeah.
And you can get away with that some, but I mean, nobody's going to really let you do that. And so you're moving all the time.
Right.
How can you sing doing that? I mean, like you said, it's you just get the rhythm going, yeah, then you can sing.
Yeah, it's just once you get in the pocket, so they say, then you might can as a bass. Not because I'm not a bass player, but if I were a bass player, I feel like harmonies would be a little bit easier to do because you're not on the hook.
Well, you can't.
Yeah.
you know. But you have. It's really hard to do. I know it's hard to do. And the bass has its beat, and your singing may be different, and you're just remembering. You have to.
Yeah.
You have to pay more attention. Mark Sirio was a really good bass player singer.
Yeah, he is. I've never
in Paul Grimshaw's band.
Oh yeah,
he's really good.
Man, I was those guys
for a long time.
Those guys are just a bunch of badasses. Tom Hanlon is my hero, man.
Yeah,
I love me some Tom Hanlon.
Yeah,
that's my boy.
Yeah, and Paul's a really good singer too, I think.
Yeah, he is. His catalog is
it's anything. It's everything.
Yeah. I mean,
that's what he's so great at, too. You know, you get a request. It doesn't matter. He's there. He's got it. And they've got it because they're great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hanlon, I got to get inside Hanlon's head for a couple of years while I was playing with the Winchesters. That changed.
Yeah, I don't know him well.
That changed a lot of how I played, like, my rhythm guitar, because Hanlon was one of the guys that would tell me, you know, sometimes because I like, you know, anytime I play a D chord, I would always leave the bottom note out and I would just strum the open E.
Sounds good, right?
Sounds good. But Hanlon was one of the guys that would tell me, you know, there's a reason that people that the chord is meant to be played like that, because it just sometimes it adds that bit of a fuller sound. And he says, when you play, and Hanlon is such a fantastic lead player.
It's like we were talking about, talking a lot or playing a lot. If you don't, people may pay more attention. So,
yeah.
You know, play it straight most of the time.
Right.
Then when you do it.
Well, he's such a fantastic lead player that if I was playing with the E open or. Mm-hmm.
It
changes what he would play on lead. So I didn't even realize that, where he was like, so what I'm doing on lead right here is going to clash with if you don't do that. And I was like, oh, shit. So I get it. That makes sense. And now that changed the way I started looking at things, because Hanlon being one of those Nashville guys, I mean, the hustle is Hanlon. Doing the hustle, that's Hanlon. That's Tom Hanlon playing that lick. And that's his lick. And I was like, man, you know, say what you want.
I didn't know that.
Say what you want, man. But dude, he's a licks guy.
Uh-huh.
And just.
Well, he's a licks guy, and he knows when not to, you know, because he plays what we, you know, call.
I noticed that chair might be caught on the corner of the carpet, too. If that bothers you.
Oh.
If it doesn't, I'm fine. It doesn't bother me.
Okay. It might be worse to try to change it for me.
Yeah.
But everybody just see my ass across the universe.
It kept happening to Scott the other day. Scott Mann.
Oh, uh-huh.
And it was bothering him, so that's the only reason I bring it up. But if it's not bothering me, I don't give a shit. But, but nah, man. But back to playing bass. And I said it's that like it's playing like playing
lead.
On an off.
It really is like playing lead while you're singing. I mean, who could do that?
And I said that it comes on an off beat, which is probably not the right way to say it. But just the way your fingers have to work is so much different than the way your fingers would have to work. Say if you were finger picking, there's no rhythm in it. Like you would have to do something like it, like say. Da 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 instead of like da 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 instead of
Finger picking is going to be finger picking.
Yes.
It's just kind of godless on autopilot.
Yep, yep.
Well, sorry, you can't be on autopilot.
No way.
You just can't.
But yeah, we do get a little bit of freedom by not having a bass player just to do whatever we want. We can add any song, mm-hmm. anytime. Mm-hmm. And Smitty playing the djembe is, I mean, I'm very proud of all the progress he's made over the last couple of years of doing that. So we can pretty much, as long as this is straightforward 4/4, we can pull off.
Let's wing it.
Yeah, let's give it a shot. Right.
I mean, that's the only way I've pretty much ended up. Not this past year. I did some rehearsals this past year with the band I had, but in the past I would say, okay, can I wing it? Or I'd call everybody or text everybody and say, okay, this song, you know, listen to it.
Yeah,
because I'm gonna play it, and you know, it would be a train wreck. But the next time it wouldn't be so much.
Yeah.
And maybe they listened to it and, you know, and soon it was in, you know, the repertoire, and you know, that's how we got a few new songs in.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, throw it out there, you know.
Gotta do that.
Yeah.
You gotta do it to keep from being bored, man. That's another one of those things. Like, it's like you're out driving and you've already been planning on going to Sonic. Like, you know what? We're going to Sonic. But you know what? You drive by Bojangles and you're like, you know what, man? You guys want to go to Bojangles instead of Sonic?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I could eat some chicken. Why not? Fuck it. And then that's how all of these other things do. Like, somebody asked for a song by an artist. And we don't know that song they asked for, but then they're like, well, we can do another one of those songs. Yeah. And then that's where I'll say, well, I've been listening to this other song by them, not the one that we've been doing all the time. That if I had my way, and it's impossible to do this, but if I had my way, I would not do the same song two shows in a row. Like, I would say...
That's quite a challenge.
But that's the games I like to play. Those are the games I like to play.
I don't know, 30, 40 songs? I don't know if I could pull out, like, you know, I don't think I know 80 songs. Maybe I know 80 songs.
I don't even know. I don't know that I could come up with a number. I don't know that I could
come up with a number. I mean, then you could actually sing, that you remember enough words.
Yeah.
You could sort of mumble through one of the verses and it'd be okay, but you'd pull it
right
out.
Yeah, because I do that a lot anyway, because I think most people, that's where the tip jar does really well, is when someone asks for a song and you're like, yeah, I don't really know it, but I'll give it a shot for you. And then you pull off like a verse and two choruses and then be like, does that count? Does that count?
It's like, you know, stump the band. Yeah. All you need is like this many,
right,
you know, bars and you qualify. And they love it. They love it. I mean, you tried... And probably you ended up doing better than they would expect, since you told me and I don't really know this song.
Right, right.
So, yeah. Yeah.
It works. I think, and this area, too, the Myrtle Beach area, is so... I don't want to say this the wrong way. A lot of people that come to the Myrtle Beach area are going to want to hear the same 12 songs that most other people want to hear. I want to be the one that will play them 12 different songs by those artists that they want to hear.
Well, that'll, you know, that helps. The trouble is with me, I don't know any of them. And it's that everyone wants to hear their favorite songs.
Yep.
And I understand that, but it forces everybody to kind of do the same.
Yeah,
songs, because it's a tourist crowd. It's not like a big city where people are coming out to see you.
Yes.
And whatever you want to play them, they're good. And they wouldn't think of coming up to you and asking you to play their favorite song.
Yeah. Or not even their favorite song, but the song that they hear so much that they think it's good. And I'm of the church of that. There are songs that are just not good. But everybody loves them just because the radio keeps playing it. And the radio keeps playing it.
I'm not. You think it goes that direction.
Okay. I think so, man.
It's like hypnosis.
I think so. I really do, yes.
See, I just think people have awful taste.
Well, I think that's a lot
the populace likes good stuff, but there's just a lot of stuff that.
Well, just in the during the mid '90s, the public
likes that I think is awful.
During the mid '90s, when you could turn the radio on and listen to top 40 radio, and it was good. Like I think so, and then maybe that's just because that sends me back to the sentimental times of when I was growing up, and I could think about listening to songs on the radio, and it was fun, and I enjoyed it.
Oh, we all listened to radio, but I don't think when I was growing up, I think maybe half was good.
Yeah,
you know, and half was what we often called bubblegum.
Oh yeah, yeah. And so, see, I think that back then
we looked down on it.
We call those one-hit wonders. You know what? Yeah. If it's a band that had a great song, cool. Oh,
but these were awful songs. And you know, I don't know. You know, I don't think too many of them. Some of them I now think are okay. You know, sugar, honey. You know, just one-hit wonders, but like just stupid songs. But you know, most of them were great. I think people like great songs. It's just. I think through the years in any generation. I mean, I'm surprised because I probably didn't listen to the radio in the 90s. But
yeah, well,
you know, if every song was good, I don't care if they were one-hit wonder.
In my opinion, they were. But then I noticed that it became everything overnight. You wake up and it was Britney Spears and boy bands. Mm-hmm. And everything changed right then when it was just Britney Spears and boy bands. And then, like, you didn't get any more of those, like, really cool Tub Thumper Chumbawamba songs anymore. and I don't know, man. I noticed it then where I was like, are they really just these songs that you hear? And how many songs did people... And think about this, listeners. Think about this where you are right now. How many songs have you heard in your life when you first heard them? You were like, this is awful. How can anybody like this? And then 2 weeks later, it comes on and you get excited because you're singing along to it in your head already. I just feel like that
happens.
I think it happens a lot.
Because it's, does that ever happen to you? You hate a song and it keeps throwing at you. You don't go like, God, I hate that song every time. See, that's me.
It does backwards.
Okay,
I will hear a song. I will hear a song.
If they play it enough,
and I'm like, man, this is actually not that bad. Yeah. This is a really good song. And then the more you hear it, it's like, okay, we get it. I'm sorry, but play me something different now. That happened to me with the Tennessee Whiskey, the Chris Stapleton's version of Tennessee Whiskey. I heard it, and I was like, wow, this is great. Like, this could be one of the greatest covers ever. And then I start listening to it, and I'm like, man, it's just
two chords.
Yeah.
It's like, easy to get. And then everybody starts putting it in their repertoire, too,
Yeah, it just sounds very familiar. And then I realize this is just that Etta James song.
Thank you. It's just... I'd Rather Go Blind.
It's just an Etta James song. And then I was like, okay.
It really pissed me off.
The curtain is out now.
That was
now.
The way I was. And I still am, you know. And people, they love to hear it. And every time I say to myself, I wish they knew it was, that's an Etta James, you know.
Yeah. It's just, and not to say that it's a bad song. It's a great cover. Well, it's good enough.
But it's not a cover of I'd Rather Go Blind.
Yeah, exactly. It's a cover steal. Of a cover of a. It's he stole lyrics from somewhere.
Oh, did he really? I didn't even know
the Tennessee that. Whiskey. That's a George Jones tune, man. The original. Uh-huh. The original is I used to spend my nights out in a ballroom. That George Jones little.
Oh, God, you do that well.
But just that little the ballroom. Well, he goes from so high to that little low. Yeah. But yeah, that's a George Jones song. Dean Dillon wrote it. David Allan Coe also recorded a version of that song before George Jones did.
Yeah,
and
but you know.
Yeah, but it was George's hit first.
Right. I mean, you give respect. You can make it right. Your own. But you don't steal it.
That's what I mean, man. Like, don't. We're in this. And Chris Stapleton is a fantastic songwriter.
Lawsuit. But I guess, you know, two chord song, and maybe it's hard to defend. I mean, Ed's was a two chord song too. Really.
Even the intro,
I know, like it's the same thing. Like, you know, it drove me crazy.
It's the same,
and it's around song. A lot, so it drives me crazy a lot.
Yeah, same here. And then so many people just want to hear that. Now I think that we have almost wagon wheeled it to the point to where people are embarrassed to say Tennessee Whiskey. Now they just request Chris Stapleton, which opens the door for me to play a Chris Stapleton song that he wrote that mm-hmm. is actually a good song mm-hmm. that not many people know. And mm-hmm. and I love to do that. I like to feel like I'm educating the crowd, but not many people want to be educated.
They want to hear their favorites.
They want to hear Simple Man or Tennessee Whiskey or whatever insert popular Tom Petty song or whatever.
It's just
and
a
I love
whole
Tom
different
Petty.
Thing. I mean, they're tourists, and it's different.
Yeah,
it's different. And but you know, some people, there's a line. I probably shouldn't say it on air, from a Jerry Jeff Walker song, from way way back, and he's talking about. He says most people go out to clubs, and he's not even talking about like the beach because he's Jerry Jeff Walker. I mean, people come to see him generally, right. You know. But maybe he's thinking about his younger. He said people come out to clubs just to see an electric dildo, something who loves to play every single song they know. And unfortunately, since I heard that song in whatever 73, whenever I talk to somebody, I guess now I've talked to everybody about it, but it comes to mind. Because, you know, it's hard for me as a musician. I guess we're all forced to do a lot of cover stuff here, I guess I can understand it. But I guess I'm just, maybe it's just being diva-ish, but why would you think that's okay? What would you know? as much as it happens,
and I just in the post that I made on Facebook the other day that I actually Seth came down on me because of it. I think Charles Freeman came down on me because of it, and I was like, dude, I'm sorry, but this is just me being honest about this situation that I just don't see how people think that it's okay to walk up to me on my break and hold their phone up to my ear.
Well, you know, I think there's levels of it, and I see their point.
Yeah.
But there's all, you know, the bad level is, you know, stuff like that, like in the middle of a song.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm singing. Why would you think it's okay to try to get my attention?
Oh, yeah.
You know, or the other thing, which is, this is one step lower. They request a song, and it's like, sorry, we don't know that. I probably would do it. I mean, I think Seth and Charles are right about that. If we can make somebody happy, that's great.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
But what I don't like is, like, no, we don't. See, I don't do a lot of that stuff, so I end up having to say, no, we don't do it. And they're like, what, you don't know Sweet Home Alabama? Actually, we don't. You know, I love the song. I could sort of fake some leads. That one we might try. But there are a lot of other songs, and they just get obnoxious. Come on, you know, you really know it. Like, I'm hiding it from them. Because they see a lot of bands who say, you know, we're not going to play that. That's not what I mean. Yeah. It's just when they get, why would you think it's okay to, like, give me shit?
Right. And I think, but then I think you're paying for something that bands along the way have faulted them on. You know, then they're charging you with their crimes.
You know, I don't like to do Mustang Sally, but I pretty much always would. Everybody gets up and dance, and I didn't do enough dance stuff to start with.
Yeah.
And I actually enjoyed Brown Eyed Girl. I do not know the words to Wagon Wheel other than the chorus. And that is on purpose.
Good for you on that.
although I would love to play fiddle, if I can. I'm not sure yet whether I can play fiddle anymore, but because that's, see, then you sound like old Cro-Medicine.
Yes.
You know, and now it's really worth doing, and you can, you know, as a band, like, everybody will turn around. I mean, I can't play fiddle, you know, I can saw away.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the guy can't play fiddle either, so, you know, it really sounds like old Cro-Medicine, and I would love to do that.
Yeah, now that I can see, because I've been playing that song since then.
Yeah.
And I remember when it came out, and I was like,
dude, this is great. And then I'm just it's so great, embarrassed that the rest of the world were introduced to it by, and I love,
well, you know what,
Daniel, being from South Carolina, I love Hootie. I love Hootie from back in the day, but you know what? I don't play anymore Hootie because I played it. I played it for 10 years
before.
Yeah, I've retired that stuff. Yeah. We don't have to do it anymore.
Well, you know what Daniel says? He says, "The Wait is the theme song of my generation, and Wagon Wheel's the theme song." He's a little younger than you, of his generation or your generation.
Yeah, I would say that. That's probably accurate. As far as the one song that everybody does,
and you know what's great? Everybody loves
it. Everybody loves it. And in another, I would say 10, maybe 15 years, after the newness of it has died off a little bit more, it will come back and everybody will love it again. And it'll be appreciated for the good song it is and not being overplayed on the radio.
I think so, too. And like Mr. Bojangles was... If not, it wasn't really the theme of my generation, but it was the Brown Eyed Girl.
Yeah.
Like, I would go into clubs and they would say, "Mr. Bojangles doesn't live here." You know, it was one of those things. And I'm thinking of maybe doing it.
You should.
It's a beautiful song. Probably a lot of people in their 30s or in their 20s, they'd never heard it.
Yeah.
So it'd be fresh for them.
It's new territory.
Yeah. So, it for a lot of us musicians anyway, it tires our ears to keep hearing it.
Oh, and people also, I think, don't understand, and this may be our fault as musicians, too, that we don't communicate to them how we hear these things so much differently than they do as a civilian, you know.
Yeah, I've never heard, but yeah,
you know, we
as a fan, you're supposed to say fan.
Yeah, as a fan, we hear these things so much differently than they do, just simply because it's like we know how to construct it. It's like when somebody who builds chairs. Me and you look at it, we see a bar stool. But somebody who builds bar stools looks at it and sees how it goes together. And when we see how these things go together, it's like, man, this is just thievery again. It's just, we love this Bob Dylan chorus that he wrote. But then these young guys out of North Carolina, I think, Old Crow's North Carolina, maybe. But these guys wrote these beautiful verses and this beautiful story, and that is a great story in the song.
It's a great song.
It's a great song, and I love the song, but I just absolutely hate the fact that this culture that we're in these days is just so fine with most of the... And I might have a little bit of a different viewpoint of it, too, because of the... Simple Man, the version that came out, the acoustic version that came out when I was in high school. I had a song on the radio on this thing called Pick It or Stick It on 92.9.
Where is this station?
Florence, South Carolina. When I was 18 really? Or 19 years old.
Cool.
19 years old, and I had this song on the radio for Pick It or Stick It, and it was just an acoustic song with a lead. It was a four track song. Lead vocal, rhythm guitar, lead guitar, harmony line. A four track song. And I was like so proud of it. It was about my granddad. It was a good story. I was very proud of it. Put it on the song and everybody hated it. They said the arrangement was awful. They said the song is good, but the arrangement is just terrible because there was no drums, there was no bass. And everybody hated that. Everybody hated it. And that was the biggest complaint that it got. And the very next week, that Simple Man, that acoustic version of that song came out.
Yeah.
And it was just acoustic guitar and just a vocal. No leads, nothing. Just guitar and vocal.
Yeah.
And everybody went batshit crazy over that song. And it pissed me off. And the main reason that it pissed me off was not only was it basically the exact same thing that people were complaining I did a week before, but it wasn't even their song.
Yeah.
You're making money off of somebody else's art. Yeah. And whether you do it differently or not, I mean, I'm sure there's a guy out there who can paint a spot on Mona Lisa, but it ain't Da Vinci.
Right.
You know, right? He did that, right? That wasn't Van Gogh. That was Da Vinci, right?
Yeah, well, it'd be closer to Da Vinci.
Yeah, right. Yeah, for sure. 100%. But still, Michelangelo. Like, but this, for the same thing, you wouldn't expect to pay good money to have somebody paint you a copy of another painting, right? You want to hear them create something.
Why is this? The tourists love it.
You're right. You're right.
But yeah, I mean, I could see that's cool. You had a radio show, but that's the way it is. I mean, and especially just an acoustic guitar. I mean, like Sounds of Silence, I think they almost didn't get it on the radio. They almost, because they'd cut it and they wanted to put it out as a single, and somebody said, no, it's just, you need an electric guitar. I don't care. And it, if you listen to it, electric guitar isn't that great, but it needs more production value, you know, it needs more production. And, you know, you and me probably would have loved it with all that,
without
all that stuff.
Right.
I can't remember where there's an album version that doesn't have it. And Mr. Bojangles was the same way.
Yeah.
I had electric guitar. Because, I mean, I guess that's what I'm saying. I mean, the public, you know, we rail against country pop. Well, obviously.
People like it.
A lot of people like it. You know?
Yeah. I don't...
But we don't, or a lot of us.
I don't like it. I like the fact that, and I'm in this transitional phase of my life to where I'm trying to find good in things that I normally would not. So if I'm trying to find good in this stuff, I wish
I was more like that. Yeah,
I wish I'm more. I'm trying to become more like. I'm not like that. Don't get me wrong. I'm not that person. I'm attempting to become that person.
Can you become unopinionated? I mean, I'm pretty opinionated.
I know, but you know, I'm also
you
trying.
I know what you mean. Like it gets to a point where it's judgment.
Yeah,
and I think it's always good to, you know, if you can possibly not judge it. Don't.
Absolutely. Like if there's a thought in your head that what you are going to say might wrongfully, and there are people who deserve to hear certain things, which is why I use the word wrongfully. If it will wrongfully make somebody feel negative about something, then I think that might deserve a second thought before it's said. But if it's just somebody, but if it's something that they need to hear.
Oh, yeah, well, that's different.
Then by all means, say it. Like, whether it's going to make them feel bad or not. If it has to be said, then it has to be said. But I'm being very careful with deciding what has to be said these days. Trying to. But if I'm trying to find something good in this new music, is that it's doing wonders for people going to see live music. Because a lot of people are going to see those shows. A lot of the new really country pop stuff. Country,
yeah.
A lot of people are,
at festivals and fairs. And it brings,
right.
It brings, you know, it's just so good. But, like, more important artists to, like, Myrtle Beach.
For sure.
The fact that they have a country festival.
Right.
Yeah.
It does good for our area. And I want our area to do well. And
I can respect a lot of the production and a lot of the musicianship.
Oh, the harmonies are great. The artists are great. The musicians are...
So we don't have to say that's bad music. We can just say it's not our cup of tea. Or, you know, and I think musicians often...
I just call it brainless. I know that's an awful way to call it.
Judgmental.
Yeah, I don't think it's judgmental, right? It's just brainless. It's the kind of music you can listen to that you don't have to think about because there's not anything real going on.
I think it's soulless, so, I mean, that's probably similar, mind-body. Right. Yeah.
And
it's the sound. I mean, and that's what I mean, like, the public kind of... It's always had a large niche that, you know, it's smooth. They don't listen to the guitar part. They don't, you know, we do, you know. And, right, it's... this is a little bit techie, guitar geeky, but John Mayer, I was reading a little article because he was talking about, you know, he's a real gear head.
Oh, yeah.
But he said he's at a lot of sessions, he doesn't bring an amp. And, you know, because he's got this fancy thing. And a lot of people plug in the board now through this stuff. But I was really surprised because he's like, you know, really a gear geek. And he said that a lot of the stuff he's asked to play on doesn't have any air. It all has sounds so smooth and all has the same sound that if he played through an amplifier, it would be like too real.
It wouldn't match the rest of it.
Because it's just too organic.
Huh.
And, you know, and he was not really putting it down. He actually used words that were more, non-judgmental. I think he was just saying he's playing to the song and that's what he's forced to do. But I think that's kind of sad.
It is.
He said it's all virtual anyway. That's what he said.
Yeah. And
it's
all virtual.
Like, you know, there's very few actual acoustic instruments playing anywhere.
To the recommendation of Seth Funderburk, I actually do the same thing now. I don't bring my amp anymore. I have this Boss ME-80.
A lot of people. I can see it. I mean, Daniel's talking about it.
That's my amp
son
now.
Daniel from Paperwork.
Yeah,
yeah.
Daniel's been on the podcast. Daniel and Connor and Johnny.
Oh yeah. When they were doing that collective thing,
Myrtle Beach Jam,
at Wonder House.
Yeah,
yeah.
They've got a nice little thing going on over there, huh?
Oh yeah, it's a fun little place. That's where we're going to do the rehearsals. It's a lot of fun.
Oh,
the bus will be there. The bus won't. The bus is actually being retired. Anybody want to buy a shuttle bus for their band?
I remember the shuttle bus.
But
bagged up to Creek Rats.
But it's nice. I mean, there's still a little living room area, and then there's one room. And there's a glass booth, but... You know, you just record in the room now.
Oh,
Everybody does that. Sometimes they put the horns in there, but generally there's equipment in there. But it's a nice little vibe, and there's a bunch of other music, like little studios in that row. So, this will have the rehearsal. So it is nice to see, even for the rehearsal, just like that feel that you get at the show. Everybody's coming by, and it's just 10 or 15 minutes, so you get to hang before, and you get to hang after, because we don't have, like, time slots or anything show up, and so, if you can, we're having two rehearsal days this year. I'm really encouraging attendance, and so you can either come Friday or Saturday before the show and run through your song.
Yeah, that's something that I definitely have to do this year, and also... I'm getting a little bit better about waking up early. Usually, because I'm a vampire,
but you don't have to come in early. We're usually there like maybe 6.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
So you can just kind of stagger in there at 3 or whatever.
Yeah, that's usually my time.
Now, it's a little different for you because you've done it several years, and I know you're going to do great. It's like you've had a couple of rehearsals at least. I mean, you did the first year with Tennessee Joe. Because, you know, you listened to it and you knew what was happening.
Oh, yeah. That one's actually gone pretty well, I think. I think I've done that one. This will be the third year or the second year. Or the fourth year, rather.
Yeah.
But I think that one's done pretty well. But, yeah,
that's one of the highlights for me.
It's fun, man.
I just love horns so much. I'm not sure how much more they'll be able to play on. Zach will be out of town, but let me put some plugs in. I should put plugs in for who's playing.
Yeah, by all means. Right? I was just about to say, we're coming up on the hour and a half here in a few minutes. So I was going to take the last few minutes of the talk to push all of the
artists.
All the artists, all the things, all the
Seth,
details.
I have an issue with you talking about we're not artists, by the way. Did you see what he wrote about we're playing festivals?
Oh, we're glorified beer salesmen.
Right. But anyway.
That's bullshit.
The horn section, the artists, let's see. Connor's going to play some sax. He plays a bunch of stuff because he plays the second keyboard on some stuff. And JP Taylor, I think is his name. He's going to play some trumpet.
JP's a monster.
He is a monster. He's going to play flute, like on Acadian Driftwood. Yeah. It's like a flute part. And Evan Bouts, he's a young guy that they know from Coastal, is going to have a trombone this year.
Oh, nice.
So it would be nice. I don't know if Craig Sorrells is coming and played some years. I don't know where he's going to play. So who's singing? Who's playing? You're doing the one tune, right? Sweet,
yep.
Sweet. It can't be there this year, unfortunately. Aww. But let's see. Perlino. So Cameron and Gentry are doing three, I think.
That's right.
I think they're...
They do Jemima. Or no, that's...
Yes, yes, no.
Are they doing that one?
Yeah, Cameron's going to sing Jemima Surrender, I think. Unless Daniel really wants to, because we've been playing it in the Unfaithful Servants. But anyway.
And they also do Evangeline. They do a killer version.
Yes, they do
that,
a killer Evangeline. And Cameron does a killer Tears of Rage.
Oh,
it's
man.
So, like, epic. But
Cameron has one of my favorite voices of anybody I've heard.
I love his voice. Too. And they love Grandpa.
Gentry as well. So. Gentry as well. I love Cam's voice.
So, we got them. We have a lot of the paperwork guys. Chris Keys is going to sing Don't Do It. And the way to... No, Dixie Down. Not your old Dixie Down. Some of who sings what is in flux. So Patterson sings several things. Patterson Barrett from Nashville and Austin, Texas. Who else? Oh, God, I'm going to leave people out. Josh McKay, Will Ness...
Is there a list on the...
There is. I posted from the event page. No, there's not a list there. I'm sorry. There's a list. Go to the event. It's the Pauly's Island Tavern 2019 or 7th tribute to... I should know exactly what the... event page says.
Yeah, the 2019 Pauly's Island Tavern presents.
It is the October 20th from 7 to 10. Craig Kiefer, some local Pauly's Island people, Alex Lawson and his wife, Ree Lawson, are going to play some stuff. There's a woman, Tina Smith. Have you heard of the Sound House in Shalote?
Mm-mm.
It's a listening room. It's a really nice venue.
Brian Rossler actually told me about that. You're right.
With it. Yeah. And she's going to come down and sing a tune, Remedy. And then Mark Uploski from 40 Mile Detour is going to come up from Charleston.
Nice.
We've just got... I know I'm leaving people out, and I apologize. But on the event page, it has the artist list.
It's going to be a good gig.
It's like 25 artists, local artists, and like I said, a few from out of town.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's what's great, like you said. I mean, you get to see these, like, 20 other people you haven't seen since the last show. You know?
Drew Jacobs always
is going to do...
murders Lookout Cleveland, dude.
And he's adding Chest Fever, which the band has really wanted to do, because it's just... I don't know if you remember, there's this organ entrance, right?
It's just killer.
And, you know, it's just such a loose hodgepodge, and there's this weird history with it where they really thought Robbie should have given writing credit with especially that song for lyrics, but the lyrics don't mean anything.
Yeah.
We love to do that, and people don't do that. So I'm glad he's doing that this year.
Yeah, he actually asked me. He's like, "You want to do that?" And I was like, "Man, I don't know." We actually talked at I can't remember where it was. It was some random gig or whatever I saw him at, and he brought that up to me, and I was like, "Man, if you're doing it, that is all you, because I want to stand and watch." He's a monster, man.
He is a monster.
I ever since I saw him one time with The Sauce. Do you remember The Sauce?
Of course, yeah.
Man, their set list was so awesome. They did all that Motown stuff.
He's
all
a
that.
Great soul singer. He's a really good soul. You know, he was playing bass. He was in sort of my band this last year, and he was playing bass, so he didn't really want to sing much, and I don't blame him, you know. But he just sings the shit out of that soul and Motown,
he does.
Memphis kind of stuff.
That's so good.
Yeah.
Excited to hear all of that. I'm excited to see everybody. That's the big thing.
The mullets, or at least three quarters of the mullets, will be doing two tunes. Sorry, I interrupted.
Oh no, you're good. those guys are always a joy to be around. Tom Smith he messages me all the time about just random ideas. He actually said the other day, he was like, "Man, you need to talk to somebody. We need to get that Grateful Dead show thing that you were talking about going on." And I was like, "Man, it's sort of the thing." He's like, "We need to take plenty of time to do it." He said we could plan it on like the end of the year next year, and I like plan it
have
out.
It, Tom. He was like, "Great, I'll consult." Okay, I won't do it.
Actually, because one of the first times conversations I ever had with you, I gave you a call and I was like, "Man, I want to set this thing up, and I don't think there's anybody better to talk to about this than you, because you've done the band thing I think you were on the like." I don't know, fourth year by then.
It was a few years ago, I remember.
And I was like, "Man, that would be, I'm really interested in doing a Grateful Dead show."
It's a great idea.
And I don't know, that'd be fun. But it does need to be done right. It needs to be, there needs to be two drummers. There needs to be,
players.
Yeah.
Keyboard player, sure. I don't want... What's her face?
No Donna Jean.
No raving. That can
none of that.
And somebody should be Pigpen.
Oh yeah.
You know, God bless him. You don't have to be that, but you have to like maybe play organ and sing a couple of songs. You know, but you're gonna have to have that. You know.
Yeah, you gotta have your dirty hippie standing on the side of the stage. Just...
I think so. You know, I mean, that's to me, that's what makes
early
this,
in the morning.
Like, you know, the fact that the band was so double keyboard. In fact, the more I get ready for these shows and I re-listen to these songs, the more I realize how little Robbie Robertson played.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, it's kind of cool. Like, I don't have to worry about him. It really is so much that I was playing that I thought I had to play chords too. But he's got two keyboards. He's always got a piano and an organ or accordion. And that's what's great about this show. Patterson picks up an accordion. You know, for Atlantic City.
Yeah.
And, and Evangeline. And so having... That's what you want to do with the Grateful Dead show.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, you want to make it right. Do it like they would have done it.
Yeah, and, you know, find some people who are dedicated, who really are dedicated. Who, like, actually the paperwork... Kids.
Daniel, not kids Tiger. Anymore, but man, right, there will always be kids. 20 years.
Even, you know, Drew Jacobs, I saw him at the monkey business when my kids were teenagers in high school, and we'd go up there for the, you know, under 18 shows.
Yeah.
So I've known actually Drew for just incredibly long time. But, where was I? Those kids are totally into the band, like Connor's dad, you know, and... You know, some people, you know, they're a little new to the band, but if they want to come and sing a song, it's great.
Yeah.
But see, the core, and my friend Patterson that I grew up with, Patterson Barrett, we're just like band freaks. So
sure.
That's what you want. You want the people who like...
Live and breathe it.
They live and breathe it. Yeah. And, you know, I'm not that big. You don't have to play it just like the record, I think, and maybe you shouldn't when you have a band.
Yeah.
But we do. That's right. Part of the zeitgeist sort of of the show. You know, no, in the Graham Parsons show, the bass player plays a couple of mistakes on purpose because that's what they did. We don't go that far, I don't think. But, you know, that's part of the fun of this show. And that's the way the Dead, you know, a Dead tribute should be.
Oh, I've got a list of names. Like, there's certainly Billy Wright has to be there. I've got that down for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a few other names that I'm told.
And I think Rush should definitely be one of the drummers.
Oh,
I think Rush plays a lot like, I forget their names, but the
dance. Yeah, Bill and...
I forget.
Oh, gosh, wasn't Mickey? Mickey Hart and Bill Kreutzmann.
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know I knew that.
That's pretty good.
But yeah, man, that's gonna be fun, and I definitely need to do some more organization, which I'm not very.
I'll consult.
I'm organized in my own way, but a lot of people would look at it and not see it as organization. But anyway,
We are scooting right up onto that hour and a half mark, so I don't want to keep these folks much longer than that. Brother Doc Simon, I want to do it again. I almost did it again.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
I almost did it again. The 2019 7th Annual Band Tribute at the Polyzon Tavern on October 20th or 21st?
20th.
That is 6 days after my 33rd birthday. I'm going into my Jesus year, man.
Really? You looked older than that.
I know. I know. It's the beard and the grays that are peeking through the edge of my... over here, but
yeah, it's Sunday 7 to 10. We don't take any breaks. It's just straight on through 3 hours of music from the band,
and it's always a good time. And you will get to see present company excluded, the cream of the crop of this area's musicianship for sure. And that's definitely something that now it's ringing through my.
Yeah,
computer.
It's like my old amp that you'd get CB radio or whatever through.
What's so funny is these Macs, everything is connected. Mm-hmm. Every Apple product is connected. So if it rings here, it's going to ring on the computer.
But people love that, right? That's why they do
it. Oh, yeah.
You
know? Well, I've done that because I've always used Mac.
Yeah.
It's just I've always been a Mac guy. Yeah. But, either way, it's going to be very fun.
And the tavern. The pit. Back, if anybody's not been there, then you have to go just even for the pit. Right?
To see it, yeah.
Yeah,
under
right.
The pines.
Not even the show. Under the trees, down a dirt road, and make sure the sign is really not a sign. It's on the mailbox. It says PIT.
But it's bright green. So as soon as you pass the Polly's Island shops?
Right, the island shops. Not the hammock shops. It's on
Right.
It's back in there. Just trying. There's a dirt road and back in there. But that's part of the cachet.
Oh yeah, it's very nice.
They had a sign once.
One of my favorite gigs, man. One of my favorite spots, and I like to play the inside too. Brother Doc got on stage with us and did some harp on a few songs years ago. I was definitely still drinking, so it was definitely 3 or 4 years ago. And which prompted Facebook posts over the last couple of years that there are only two people who are always allowed to get on stage with a harmonica, and Doc is one of them, and Brother Gary Flowers is the other.
See, I don't know him. Daniel told me about what you said. He said, Kelsey gave you a real compliment. The story was great. I mean, it's about stupid harmonica players.
Right.
Or even good ones, but you just can't risk it.
Yep.
Because a lot of them are just honkers, and they'll play all through the vocals, so...
But they listen to Bob Dylan and think, I can do that.
Yeah. So I guess I didn't see this show, but you were saying, unless you're these two guys,
right.
Don't tell me about your boyfriend who plays, you know?
Yeah, right. So don't give a shit.
That was good.
Well, I'm glad to have been able to do such flattering. All right, Brother Doc. Well, let's give these good folks the rest of their day off to do whatever the world wherever they want to do in the world. Please go to the Facebook page of the Polly's Island Tavern Presents the 2019 7th Annual Tribute to the Man. I will be uploading the links to that in the description of this video and the description of this episode so that you can just look no further than that to find it. And also, please go to the MI Stuff Podcast website at mistuffpodcast.com. Check out our sponsors at screwballwhiskey.com, screwballwhiskey.com. Screwball Whiskey Tomorrow. Stories begin right here. And if you want to follow Unfaithful Servants on Facebook, that is a page. And that's pretty much your main gig, correct?
Well, it's a project. It's actually a tribute to the band that we do through the year. Paul Andres is going to sing, and he's in that. We actually
own
the second keyboard. But he doesn't play a lot because the other guys are in paperwork.
Right.
But it's like one of those side projects. I love it. It's great to do.
And obviously the Doc Simon's band.
Yeah. Thank you.
Which is always a pleasure.
Well, thank you.
But, all right, guys. I'm going to go ahead and let you get on with your lives. In a world full of shitty people, don't be one of those people. Be a good person. It's not that hard. Peace, bitches.